Good morning. This is the first Sunday of the month, and per our scheduled program, we have the children here for the first part of it. And not only do we have the children here this morning, but we have our honored guest who's here with us and the children, Slick. Slick is back. Some of you may have been here before to have heard Slick say a few words, but I think he might be okay. Let's see how he's doing. Oh. He's very shy. Oh. Well, hi. My name is Slick. Not my real name. My real name, well, actually, I don't know my real name, because I don't know if I'm a male or a female. I don't really know if I'm Gale or Dale, but I am a snail. And I used to have a big problem. I used to feel really down in the dumps all the time. Did you know that snails are very, very shy? When anybody comes by, I hide. And then I come out and see if it's okay to make my way. You know, I was talking to another kind of downer friend named Slug. And one day I'm saying to my, well, down and outer buddy, that every other creature seems to have a better life than us. Why? Well, think about it. Birds can fly. Frogs can jump. Fish swim. Squirrels can climb a tree. But all we do is crawl along the ground. So I was feeling really kind of down in the dumps after talking to my friend Slug. And we were comparing notes. And he said, yeah, remember the last meeting we went to? Bird got there in 5 minutes. Frog got there in a couple leaps and bounds. Squirrel got there right away. Fish stayed home. Wisely. And I got there just when they were packing up to come back. And Slug says, you think that's bad? I was still packing my bag when you guys returned. So anyway, we were in that kind of pity party. In case you didn't realize, this talk is about self-esteem. Self-esteem. So one day, feeling this way, I heard somebody singing a song. And if we can get the other prop here. Just a moment. This is the song I heard. Come out, come out. Come out and play. There'll never be a better day. Come out from your old shell. And you might find a real pal. I look up in the tree and there is Bee. I said, Bee, were you singing to me, Bee?
B said, I was singing to you, baby, because my name is the Yellow Sonnet, and I'm here to put a B in your bonnet, boy. Now you think all the time, too much. You think because the fish can swim,
yeah,
the bird can fly,
uh-huh,
and squirrels can go up and down trees,
yeah,
that what else? Skunk can really smell.
Well, not that one.
Anyway, you compare yourself to all the other creatures, and you think, because I can fly around from flower to flower all day,
yeah, that sounds really great to me,
and all I do in my life is make honey, yeah, you think I have it easy.
Well, don't you?
Do you know what it is to be a bee?
Well, if I did, I'd be you.
To be a bee means to wear yourself out for others all day long, and not only that, we're built in a class system. I can't even get out of my own class. You don't have to worry about that.
Well, that's true.
And what about this? All day I'm busy, busy, busy. It's busy bee, busy bee. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah.
Well, that's not so much fun all the time flying around. And you, well, look down and there you are, inching along the ground.
Yeah.
Like that. Show me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that. Each grain of sand, you know you're intimate with each grain of the sand. You have your own measured pace. You don't go faster or slower. You're always going just measured along. I can't do that.
You can't?
No, I can't do that, but I wish I was you.
That's funny. I wish I was you.
Well, hey, let's touch feelers in. Come out of your shell, and you may have a real pal. Come out of your shell. Don't compare yourself with anyone, or you'll feel you're in. So, do you get the moral of the story? Be who you are. Crawl, fly, swim, run, just be who you are.
Boom, boom, boom.
Be. Thank you very much.
What? Oh, yeah. Will the farm please set aside a special piece of lettuce for her? It's slick. Bye. Say goodbye to Slick. Say goodbye to Slick.
We need to be.
You need to be. To be or not to be. Yeah. Bye. Are you shy? Well, just lie on your back, Slick. So today's talk has already been given, but because we have to extrapolate a little more meaning, squeeze out a little more understanding, I have to find a way to squeeze out some time here. I found a couple other stories that go along with B and Slick story. And it's interesting because I use that word, self-image, yes, self-esteem, self-regard, self-esteem. That's somewhat problematical in Buddhism, what this self that is being esteemed is, and how we become esteemed Esteem means, as you know, to hold one something in higher than usual regard. And recently I had the good fortune to turn on the... Somebody gave me a tape about this phenomenon that has swept the country in the last 10 years or so called SLAM. SLAM is, as you know, a poetic form, a kind of form of protest rhetoric that is presented by poets or actors on stage around the country, and it is usually spoken rather fast and with certain stylistic tendencies, and usually somewhat polemical. It's the tongue of protest about the state of whatever. And the one who won, the person who won the nationals that year, I think it was about 4 years ago, his name is Shane Kyokzan, or K-O-Y-C-Z-A-N. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce that, Shane. And he's a young man, at least on the video, that was not probably a candidate for one of the beautiful people that we see in the magazine covers. Overweight and... kind of nondescript fellow, shirt hanging out and so on. Obviously a person who felt that, like Slicky, was an outsider. And like so many outsiders, they end up as poets. That's one of the prerequisites of feeling like an at least in the West. Anyway, I was quite taken by his soliloquy or his slam. Piece. And so I kind of painstakingly copy it down. And it can probably be gotten off a computer. But I did it this way. And I think, edited any kind of offensive language out of it a little bit. And maybe I misunderstood some of the words because they came so fast. But anyway, here's what he says. Although I can't say it in his endemical style. Every day, Grandma would come into my room and I'd hear her say, "Rise and shine. The world of wonder is holding up a sign. There's help wanted out there somewhere, young man." So I rose and shone, put on my shoes, and I was gone. See, Grandma brought me my first phone. She said, "Don't bother calling people who care. Call people who don't. Don't bother calling people who have taken up a life. Call people who won't." And I learned at a very young age where Grandma's rage came from. The entire congregation of God never asked Grandma about God. I'd argue with her every day. All she'd say was, "Go down to the store and buy some light bulbs. And when you run out, buy some more. Because the light at the end of your tunnel needs to be maintained. You can't let it be stained by their beliefs are better than yours and agree to disagree because maybe they're wrong. You're strong and you've gotten lazy until your vision is a little hazy. You're not sure what it is you want, but what you've got is all you need. It falls to greed for what every hypocritical churchgoer who won't walk past beggars and won't spare a dime," Grandma said, "forget them. I don't talk to God because I ain't got the time. Every time I walked, I thought it strange, a brother who stopped to ask me, 'Hey, can you spare some change?' 'Yes, I can.' Because, you see, I don't carry change around in my back pocket. And I don't wear it in a locket around my neck. I keep change on the tip of my tongue so I can climb the rung up the ladder to a better place. I forgot about saving face. Grandma said, 'Save your grace.' I keep change in the tip of my pen. And it seeps out every now and then in bursts of anger that make me think that maybe the writing on the wall could use a little revision. Grandma told me, 'Stop trying to calculate the difference between people. People don't need division. Gotta stick together, gotta love each other. Father, mother, sister, brother, uncle, cousins, aunts, the jokes, the Jews. After 2,000 years, you'd think we'd know by now.' Grandma said, 'We'll only find equality in the number of our tears.' And she was right. Because I don't know what injustices you've suffered. I don't know what injustices you've suffered based on size, sex, race, religion, or the political pigeon sitting on our shoulders of us versus them. Like in Bethlehem, the man said, hey, I could be wrong. Can't we all just get along? No. So we nailed to a tree. See? Justice isn't justice. It just is. And I can't change it and you can't change it, so we just got to rearrange it. And I put off my fear of the chance to see you see what I see. Because seeing is believing. And the way people see me, if you see what I see, you wouldn't want to see anymore. But I've got a surprise in store. For every man who looks at me with judgment in his eyes, there's a woman who looks at me with lust in her thighs. I'm the world's greatest overweight lover. And you might just laugh and you might just scoff, and my bones are made of sticks and stones and names just piss me off. Grandma told me, young man, you can't be concerned with whatever they've got. The only reason they think you're beautiful is the same reason they think you're not. And young man, you have beauty beyond measure. You are a treasure entrenched in this earth. You can't let strangers determine your worth. Rise and shine. So I rose and I shone. I put on my shoes and I was gone. See, Grandma brought me my first phone. She said, young man, from time to time, I too need a smile. And do me a favor, will you? Keep me on the speed dial. Yes, Grandma, I will. And still to this day, I can hear her, I can call her up. And still to this day, I can call her up and hear her say, it's a game. You play, you win. You play, you lose. You play. Rise and shine. The world of wonder that's holding up a sign is help wanted out there somewhere. But young man, if you are playing to win, the first thing you have to do is apply within. Not bad, huh? So here we have the same kind of, you know, it's a polemic, it's a presentation of the value of the, what we call, oneself. And there's a tension between wanting to belong and be recognized and validated, have our paper stamped as culturally what we come to consider ourselves or the self to be, and at the same time, not to belong, but also to assert this uniqueness that each of us is, to find that, to rise and shine with that, to shine our light upon the world with our unique qualities. Whether we crawl on the ground or can fly like eagles, there's a uniqueness. But, you know, prompted me to bring all of this up was the realization, the recognition over and over again that when I talk to people about their lives, the recurrent theme I hear is not good enough. I'm not good enough. No matter how I've lived my life or what my relationship is, there's some aspect of my life in which I am not good enough. And it's true. In some comparative sense, if I sit down to play the piano for the first time, I'm certainly not going to be good enough as Rachmaninoff was. It takes practice to be good enough in certain conventional ways. But intrinsically speaking, there's something missing. I'm just not, I don't measure up. No matter how I play the piano, as Beethoven's father said, play it soft, not good enough. Play it loud, not good enough. Play it in between, not good enough. Drive ourselves on by not being good enough, measuring ourselves against some other standard as set by someone else, large or small. So what is this question then about feedback? How do we know who the self is? After all, it doesn't take much subtlety of intelligence to realize that what we call the self is understood in comparison with others. Words are comparative references. Who we are in the world is possible because of who you are. Who I am is possible because of how I find myself through you, how I see myself through your eyes, and so on, back and forth. That inner sustaining, interdependent, mutually sustaining dialectic of self and other. There's no way without the mirror can I know who I am alone. But what's interesting in these, and most of us know that we're interested in this particular give and take, presentation of self and other, what divides us from other people and so on, is the feeling that at some point in our life, maybe we were born with it, a propensity for it, but anyway, at some point we bought the story, I'm not good enough. And when you go to the teacher and you say to the teacher, I've been sitting now for 10 years and I've learned the sutras and I put on these robes, like one of the monks did in one of the classic stories, and I've shaved my head, taken the precepts, well, I don't still feel like I'm good enough. Or, how come I don't feel I'm Buddha? How I am. And the teacher said, there's nothing better than an absence of goodness. And the monk woke up. Now we hear that story and we wonder what it was by hearing the fact that there's nothing better than an absence of goodness in a world where we've been taught from the beginning, it's hard to be good, it's easy to be bad. I'm not good enough. Or we could use that term in a mediocre way. Well, that's good enough. That's good enough. It's not perfect, but it's good enough. It's still a kind of downer, isn't it? It's still a little bit disparagement. Yeah, that's good enough. It'll stick. Will this talk be good enough? Nobody's going to remember it 5 minutes from now anyway, including me. How do we work with feedback? Very popular. How do we take in information? And what is this we that takes in the information aside from that information? Can we find it? Or is this information informing information? Or life living the life of life? Where does the buck stop? Where does it come from? How do I know who I am without you telling me? First of all, I'm male. I'm an old male. I'm an American. I'm an Aquarian. I'm a Buddhist. I'm a priest. See, I got some identity here. But when I look for any of that in a solid way, when I look for something to predicate my life on that, what's my life separate from that, those roles? It just depends the roles I decided to buy for myself, it seems to me. Right speech has something to do with the kind of way we inform each other about our opinions and views so that we don't belittle the other person and we say one shouldn't praise oneself at the expense of others. And if you listen to our conversations, even the conversation between Slick and Slug one-ups Slick by saying, if you think that was bad, you should have seen the time I tried to go to the meeting. I was still packing my bag when you guys were all coming back. I'm either one up or one down from you. I'm either better than you or I'm not nearly as good as you. And usually, at least in these kind of meetings, I'm not good enough because I set my standards, someone like you, someone like the teacher, someone like Buddha, somebody I've read about, some hero on the screen. I want to be like that. I want to be sinner. I want to be beautiful. I want to be smart, you know. I want to be slick. I want to be able to slide through life without too many hang-ups. Some people seem to be able to do it. Some people can fly, and some people can, you know, really sit. And I can't do any of that. I go to the teacher, and the teacher said, now, go back and sit. Now it's not working for you anymore. All of your desires to be the bird, you want to be the frog, you want to be everything else, but who you are. Now go back and sit, because who you are isn't enough. Go back and sit with not good enough. Sit with that. Make that your mantra. Find out where that's coming from. Make friends with that one. See if you can make yourself laugh at that. Vis-a-vis, third little story here. comes from the record of Zen master Rinzai, or Rinchi. It has to do, again, with self-evaluation, self-authentication. At first, Rinzai was one of the monks who studied under Master Obaku. He was very sincere and pious. The head monk was very impressed with him and praised him that although he was young, he was very different from the others. Already we have a little split here. Maybe the story, you know, whoever compiles these does have an axe to grind. We know who the hero of the story will be. The head monk asked him one day, "How long have you been here?" "I've been here for 3 years," Rinzai replied. By the way, Rinzai was about 7 feet tall. He played right end on the Rams or something, I think. The head monk said, "Have you ever met Obaku and asked questions?" "No, I've never asked anything yet. I don't know what to ask," Rinzai said. Head monk said, "Why don't you go see Obaku and ask, what is the cardinal principle of Buddha Dharma?" Rinzai did as he was instructed, of course. But hardly before he had finished the questions, Obaku struck him. Whack. As Rinzai returned, the head monk asked, "How was the meeting?" Rinzai said, "Master Obaku struck me before I could finish my question. I don't understand this. I think I'll sue him." But he couldn't. This was a different time and place. The head monk said, "Ask the same question once again." Rinzai did so. Obaku struck him again. Rinzai entered Obaku's room 3 times to ask the same question and was struck 3 times. Finally, Rinzai told the head monk, "Oh, this is great." He had practice. He says, "You were very kind to let me ask questions to Master Obaku. I asked 3 times and was struck 3 times. I regret I couldn't understand the deepest meaning because of some obstructions in my mind. Now I wish to leave here for a while." The head monk said, "You better bid farewell to Master Obaku before leaving." Rinzai bowed and withdrew. Soon after, the head monk came to Obaku and said, "The young monk who just asked you a question is very excellent and sincere. If he comes up here to take leave, please guide him with appropriate means. If trained and educated well, he will in the future be a great tree which would provide cool shade for everyone." Obaku said to Rinzai, who had just come to take leave, "You had better not see anyone else but Taigu on the bank of the Kowan River. I'm sure he will give you some good guidance." When Rinzai arrived, Taigu asked him, "Where did you come from?" Rinzai replied that he had come from Obaku's monastery. Taigu asked what Obaku's guidance was like. Rinzai replied that he had asked Obaku what the cardinal principle of Buddha Dharma was and had been struck 3 times, and he didn't know if something was wrong with him or not. Hearing this, Taigu said, "Oh, Obaku extended unlimited kindness to you like an old lady does to her grandson." Get the connection? "But notwithstanding it, you came all the way here and asked me if anything was wrong with you or not." "Oh, Obaku extended unlimited kindness to you like an old lady does to her grandson. Not understanding it, you came all the way here and asked me if anything was wrong with you or not." Hearing this, Rinzai's mind was suddenly open to a great enlightenment, an insight into a hitherto unknown place of mind. Then Rinzai said, "Oh, there's nothing special about Obaku's Buddha Dharma." Taigu grabbed him by the neck and said, "You bedwetting little devil, whined about it if you were wrong or not just a moment ago, and now you boast that there's nothing special about Obaku's Buddha Dharma. What on earth did you really know? Say it quick." Rinzai jabbed Taigu on the side of his ribs with his fist 3 times. Boom, boom, boom. Pushing him off, Taigu said, "Your teacher is Obaku. I've got nothing to do with you." Rinzai returned to Obaku's monastery. Seeing that Rinzai had just come back, Obaku said, You restlessly travel between places. I wonder if you will be able to someday complete your study. Rinzai said, I did so only because you suggested to me out of this great grandmotherly kindness. After these greetings, he stood by Obaku, who asked where he had been. Rinzai answered, following your benevolent suggestion, I've been to Taigyu's place. Obaku asked, and what did Taigyu say? Rinzai told him what had happened there. Obaku said, how I wish to catch and give him a hard blow. Rinzai said, why do you talk about wishing to do that? Have it right now. And so saying, he slapped Obaku in the face. Obaku shouted, you're crazy. How could you pull the tiger's whiskers? Rinzai shouted back. Obaku ordered an attendant, take this lunatic out to the monk hall, to the monk's hall. Later, Izan asked Gyozen a question on this incident. He asked, in this case, did Rinzai get his power from Taigyu or Obaku? Gyozen replied, he not only rode on the tiger's head, but he also knew how to take hold of its tail. So you see, in Zen rhetoric, we turn everything upside down a little bit. All the usual value judgments are turned around. Cut loose from the usual implications of our patterning, our conditioning. Break through that, but see at the same time how we are patterned and what our processes are and what sees it. Who is free to pull finally the tiger's whiskers? Who's finally the tiger? Who's big enough to pull the tiger's whiskers? Are you free enough to walk into the boss's room and pull his whiskers? And who's the boss in your life, in mine? So how do we give feedback that is more than just the kind of validation maybe that Sean is asking for? As a fat guy in a world where he's not very noticed and needs affirmation of his intrinsic worth, of his uniqueness as his uniqueness, of his beauty. But these guys, they already have been through that trip, it sounds like. They already have been confirmed as ego. They already knew that place of themselves in the world. Now, how do they undo that affair? So that there's no longer holding on anywhere. There's just free fall or free flight. And in order for that to happen, there's usually some kind of teaching or some kind of shock, either directly in our life, either through disruption, sometimes through silence, sometimes through, in this case, direct pointing. In other words, a slap in the face of some sort. It seems in the Zen tradition that much of the awakening that came after long intellectual anguishing about how we are programmed, and if we are programmed by concepts and the way we are conceptually formed, then how do we step through that? Step out of the binding force of concept, of thought, of our social conditioning. And that's what practice is about. And that's what the middle way is about. First, affirm yourself, and then go see the teacher. Go to the one who will put a bee in your bonnet. Go to the one who might have a stinger on the other end. Actually, that happens in our life every day anyway. We don't really have to go to anyone to do that. We're getting free, sometimes more than enough information back about who we think we are from moment to moment, so that sooner or later you will say to someone, or they'll say to you, you've changed. You ever get that? Your life, you know, you've changed. And sometimes it's because I don't want you to change. And sometimes it's, God, you've changed. Meaning, this version of who I see before me now is different from the version I saw yesterday or last month. And because you have risen and shown your light upon the world, I feel that light in you. Or I feel your darkness, your disappointment, your despair. I respond to that. Not good enough. And I can make that my whole story, my whole life. In the West, there's the legend of Saturn eating his children. It's something about that myth, about whatever comes forward aggressively, the old man eats He's not going to be over cynics. His not experience is not going to be supplanted by new ways of doing things. The establishment that has risen finally through hard effort and pain, one position of power and security, is not going to give it up easily. You're going to eat some of those kids that come along. And the kids that come along are those impulses that we have, like, you know, you could. I've never painted a stroke in my life. I couldn't do it. And you know that one. That's Saturn eating his children. Do Zen, be a religious person? Yeah, you're out of your mind. I can't do that shit. That's not who I am. Well, who are you? What is our limitation, finally, but our definition? Born through our experience. So we read ourselves, we tell ourselves many different stories. We encourage each other, or we discourage each other. Sometimes we need to discourage each other in some way that's helpful, and sometimes we don't know when it's encouragement always and when it's not encouraging. And that not knowing, not having necessarily that fluency that we'd like, you know, that kind of slippery quality, slick quality. We can kind of move through narrow, tight spaces together because we've learned an expertise, we've learned a methodology, we've learned skillful means maybe. But sooner or later, as soon as that structure is made, as soon as that definition is made, that becomes another wall, another prison. I just heard about a teacher who struggled for years to establish himself, herself. As a teacher in the world now, has a thriving sangha, but has no time to do anything else. He's reached the pinnacle of success in his own eyes. But now there's not a moment for anything but that world he has created. So we get what we want sometimes and then find out. Just when I got to the top of the mountain and I was a happy camper, right? Like I got the shell on my back, I got the teaching, I'm carrying the Dharma, I can kind of crawl up. And then I thought it was this peak we're going to, and it's that one. Or now I got to go down to the bottom. Can I just hang out here for a while? Pitch my tent. No, you can't. Even if you try. So to come out of our shells, to rise and shine, and be ourselves, whoever we are. Billy, be yourself. My dad used to say to me, Davy, be yourself. And I'd say, who is that? And he'd say, pinch me on the nose and say, find out. Dad, I still don't know who I am. Good work, find out. Go back and sit. Go back to work. Go back and paint. Do something. There's a world out there. Help wanted, young man. I'm going to finish by reading that poem one more time. Every day, Grandma would come into my room and I'd hear her say, rise and shine. The world of wonder is holding up a sign. There's help wanted out there somewhere, young man. So I rose and shone, put on my shoes, and I was gone. See, Grandma bought me my first phone. She said, don't bother calling people who care. Call people who don't. That's Bodhisattva, right? Don't bother calling people who've taken up a life. Call people who won't. And I learned at a very young age where Grandma's rage came from, the entire congregation of God never asked Grandma about God. Watch out for our disillusionments. Watch out for putting God in the wrong place. Never ask Grandma about God. I'd argue with her every day. All she would say was go down to the store and buy some light bulbs, and when you run out, buy some more. Because the light at the end of your tunnel needs to be maintained. You can't let it be stained by their beliefs are better than yours and agree to disagree because maybe they're wrong. You're strong, but you've gotten lazy until your vision is a little hazy. You're not sure what it is you want, but what you've got is all you need. It falls to greed for what every hypocritical churchgoer who won't walk past beggars and won't spare a dime, Grandma said, forget them. I don't speak to God because I ain't got the time. And it struck me as strange every time I walked a brother who stopped to ask me, hey, Can you spare some change? Now, how he plays with the word change here. Yes, I can, because, you see, I don't carry change around in my pocket. And I don't wear it around my neck in a chain in some locket. I keep change on the tip of my tongue so I can climb the rung up the ladder to a better place. I forget about saving face, Grandma said. Save your grace. I keep change in the tip of my pen, and it goes out every time, now and then, in bursts of anger that make me think that maybe the writing on the wall could use a little revision. Grandma told me, stop trying to calculate the difference between people. People don't need division. Got to stick together, got to love each other, father, mother, sister, brother, uncles, cousins, aunts. The Jews, after 20,000 years, you'd think you'd know by now, Grandma said, we'll only find equality in the number of our tears. And she was right. Because I don't know what injustices you suffer based on size, sex, race, religion, nor the political pigeon sitting on the shoulders of us versus them. Like in Bethlehem, the man said, hey, I could be wrong. Can't we all just get along? No. So we nailed him to a tree. See? Justice isn't justice. It just is. And I can't change it, and you can't change it, so we just gotta try and rearrange it. And I can't put off my fear of the chance to see you see what I see, the way people see me, because if seeing is believing, if you see what I see, you wouldn't want to see anymore. But I've got a little surprise in store. For every man who looks at me with judgment in his eyes, there's a woman who looks at me with lust in her thighs. I'm the world's greatest overweight lover. And you might laugh, and you might just scoff, and my bones are made of sticks and stones, and names just piss me off. Grandma told me, young man, you can't be concerned with whatever they've got. The only reason they think they're beautiful is the same reason they think you're not. And young man, you have beauty beyond measure. You have a treasure entrenched in the earth. You can't let strangers determine your worth. Rise and shine. So I rose and shone. I put on my shoes and I was gone. See, Grandma bought me my first phone. She said, young man, from time to time, I too need a smile. Would you do me a favor and keep me on the speed dial? Yes, I will, Grandma. And still to this day, I can call her up and hear her say, it's a game. You play. You win, you play, you lose, you play. In a world of wonder that's holding a sign, there's help wanted out there somewhere, but young man, if you are playing to win, the first thing you have to do is apply within. Dogen said to know the Buddha Dharma is to study the self. To study the Buddha Dharma is to study the self. That's why we're here. We're studying ourselves. This bottomless self. Thank you. May all intentions equally penetrate.